so today I'm going to talk about my recent work about entanglement randomization circuits for car topological order. And this is a joint work with Guanyu Zhu at IBM and Alexey Gorshkov, who is my advisor at UMD. And if you are interested in more details about this talk, like, I encourage you to refer to this archive preprint. So before, like, your mind start to wonder, like, become fatigued, like, let me get straight to the take-home message. So if I were to explain this talk to a general, like, public, like, for example, like, the Uber driver sending me to the airport, or my parents, like, or the passenger sitting next to me on the airplane, I would say, like, we solved the mathematical fun problem related to quantum computing. And for physics student, we'll say that we develop a procedure to generate some highly entangled quantum state from some initially less entangled state. But like for experts like you at the top of the pyramid here, I'll summarize my research as follows. So we constructed so-called entanglement renormalization circuits for a class of car spin liquids. So the entanglement renormalization circuits are called MERA with quasi-local evolution. And we can conveniently abbreviate this circuit as miracle, which is pronounced similarly to the English word miracle. And if you're not familiar with those like technical words, I will explain later. So don't worry about that. And I believe this work deepens our understanding of the quantum complexity and entanglement structure of quantum many-body states. So here's the outline of this talk. So first, I will make an introduction to what entanglement renormalization circuits are. Then I will talk about some challenges for building entanglement renormalization circuits for chiral topologically ordered systems. And I'll talk about some ways to circumvent those challenges. Then I will talk about the main result of our work, which is to construct entanglement renormalization circuits for some chiral spin liquids model. And those circuits are called miracle circuits. Then I will talk about the conclusions and some outlook. So let's move on to the first part of this talk. So there are many ways to characterize entanglement structure of quantum many-body systems, such as entanglement entropy, tensor networks, and so on and so forth. But in this talk, we will primarily focus on the state preparation circuit to prepare some target state from some initially less entangled state. So the target state can be the ground state of the Hamiltonian you are interested in. So the advantage of this approach to capturing the entanglement structure of quantum many-body systems is that it offers an operational definition of what entanglement structure is. So it could have practical implications for realizing states in labs, and it could be used for further quantum simulation processes. And additionally, those state preparation circuits can have connections with various concepts in quantum complexity theory.
Question?
Yeah?
Can you start from a completely unentangled state?
No. So in my talk, I won't start with some completely unentangled state. So you will see in later slides.
You will or you will not?
I won't, but some less entangled state. Yeah, some of those states are product states.
Is it possible to start from completely unentangled state?
This will not be my primary focus, but if you have some less entangled state, maybe you can start using some other methods to start from the completely product state to this initially less entangled state. That's my point.
Let me make the question more sharper. Like,
yeah.
This less entangled state, it is like, what's the complexity? Like, it is like polynomial.
So I'm just try to give you a general idea, but maybe like later you'll see what I meant. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Entanglement randomization circuits are a class of state preparation circuits. And the so-called multi-scale entanglement randomization ansatz is the earliest realization of these concepts. So now, let me show you an example of a 1D Merrill circuit with time running downward. So initially, we start at the top with sparse entanglement. So we have many ancillary qubits represented by the black circles. And those qubits are in the zero state. But we also have like some qubits represented by red circles, and they can have some entanglement. So if we ignore all those ancillary qubits, we effectively we have a relatively small system composed of those red qubits. So then, what we want to do is that we want to repeatedly double the size of the system by applying layers of Merrill circuit composed of many quantum gates, such that we can progressively couple and include those ancillary qubits to the system, so that at the end we can arrive at the bottom a complex system with more complicated entanglement. So with this method, we can generate a state exponentially using logarithmic depth. So let me use this analogy. So it's a little bit like growing bacteria in a petri dish. So initially, we start with a small amount of bacteria. Then the bacteria will multiply exponentially after eating some nutrients. And these ancillary qubits will be the nutrient of those bacteria. Yeah. And what's interesting about this circuit is that because this circuit is a unitary, so we can reverse the time direction. So what it is saying is that initially we have at the bottom some highly entangled state, and we want after a layer of Merrill, we disentangle out some of the qubits, and for the remaining qubits, they effectively live on the lattice with larger and larger unit cells. So this is reminiscent of the coarse graining or entanglement or randomization group we encounter in statistical mechanics. And that's why we have the name of entanglement randomization. And for that reason, we'll also call the region down here as the UV region and the region up there as the IR region. So here I'm just showing you an example of a 1D Merrill. So inspired by this example, we can define a Merrill to be composed of strictly local gates with respect to the coarse grain lattice at each layer. And also, if the system you're considering is a translation invariant system, we sometimes also require that the circuit is translation invariant. By that I mean, for example, like this gate is the same as this gate. And also, it's also often convenient to have a scaled invariant circuit because what that means is that we can just repeat the same procedure again, again, and again, and which is very simple, simpler for experimentalists to realize it this in labs. And if a wave function is stays the same under a scaled invariant Merrill circuit, it's called a fixed point wave function. Okay, any question? Okay, so now I'm just showing you an 1D Merrill. So here, I'm trying to show you what a single layer of Merrill look like for a 2D system. So initially, we have a square lattice. And we have some degrees of freedom either on the links or the vertices of a square lattice. Then we want to find some procedure, applying some quantum gates such that after it, we have some qubits being disentangled out. So if we ignore all those disentangled qubits and look at all the remaining entangled qubits, they are effectively living on the square lattice, but the square lattice have a larger unit cells. Right now, I'll give you an example to illustrate what 2D Merrill is, if you're not familiar with that. So I'm going to show you what the Merrill for the toroidal is, actually. So before that, let me just to briefly remind you what Toricode is. So Toricode has the following two operators. One is called the this is called the vertex operator, and this is called the plot k operator. And Toricode is a quantum error correction code, and it also features topological order, and it also has interpretation of a Z2 lattice gauge theory. So for a single layer of randomization, what we'll do is that we want to apply many CNOT gates looking like this. So for each arrow here, it represents a CNOT gate. And the arrow end here represents the so-called control qubit of a CNOT gate. And the arrow head here represents a target qubit of the CNOT gate. So there are a bunch of CNOT gates, and we are taking the product of them. So you might wonder whether the order matters, because there are some overlaps between the CNOT gates. But actually, you can check that they simultaneously they basically commute with each other. So we don't have to worry about that. So if you apply those CNOT gates to the Toricode with spins living on the on the links of the square lattice, what you will find is that you have some qubits being disentangled. So you have many zero states and many plus states. And for the remaining qubits, you can check that they are still behaving like a Toricode. So what I mean is that this qubit is almost like the original Toricode plaquette, but that they're kind of elongated, coarse grain on the horizontal direction. So here I'm just showing you the what I will later call a single step of horizontal entanglement randomization. But you can also do this vertically by rotating the whole circuit by 90 degrees. Any question? Yep.
Does the same circuit work for any eigenspace of the Toricode?
I think if you have some anions, you have it's kind of a tricky. Yeah. There are some subtleties there. Yeah.
I think it's okay because this is not essentially an operator transformation. It transforms one of the stabilizer into a single Z. So if that stabilizer has minus one, then that Z is in the
Right. Or sometimes it might be disentangled out, the anions might be disentangled out, but sometimes the anions might be still in the system. That's the
situation.
Does Milan know about the
quantum anomaly? I don't know. You mean? In 1D spin 1/2 chain with translation symmetry and the spin rotational symmetry.
Uh-huh.
It's possible that each unit cell contains one spin 1/2 or two spin 1/2.
Okay.
These two classes of systems are very different in the sense that they have different quantum anomalies.
Okay.
Know about this.
What's that? Mira?
Can Mira tell the difference between these two classes?
I don't know. I've seen some Mira for example, AKOT state. Does that answer your question? I don't know. Okay, we can discuss later. Thank you. But we can have some more discussion. That'll be very interesting. Yeah. So let me So here I would denote CZ2X. So X here means horizontal entanglement randomization because I'm cross-graining the system horizontally. So Z2 here denotes Z2 lattice gauge theory. So because Toricode can be roughly thought of as Z2 lattice gauge theory. I think people here all know what that is. Yeah. So let me briefly recap what I've done. So initially we have started with some qubits living on a square lattice looking like this. Then after that, I want to apply a single layer of entanglement randomization, so composed of a horizontal one and a vertical one here. So after that, we are getting a coarse grain lattice. So the system size is reduced to a quarter of the original one, and we can keep applying this, and then we could get coarser and coarser lattices. And this is the mirror of the Toricode will be looking something like this. So the Toricode will be a so-called fixed point wave function under this scaling invariant MERA. So here's a short summary. So we have introduced the notion of entanglement randomization circuits, which are quantum circuits that can be used to prepare a large-scale entangled state. And MERA circuits are the earliest realization of entanglement randomization circuits, and it is often convenient to have a scaling invariant and translation invariant MERA circuit. And we have presented a mirror circuit for the toric code model. Yeah, any question I can? Okay, great. So let me move on to the second part of this talk. So previously I've told you like how to construct mirror for the toric code. And actually, it is also known how to construct scaling invariant mirror circuits with strictly local gates for the Levenworth models, which is also known as the string net models. And the Levenworth models include the toric code model. However, all these models are non-chiral. So the big question is, can we find scaled invariant mirror circuits with strictly local gates for chiral topologically ordered systems? So what is chiral topological order systems? Let me remind you. So a system with chiral topological order can have must have chiral edge modes on the boundary if it has a boundary. And because of those like chiral edge modes, the system do not preserve time reversal symmetry. And here are some examples like the integer quorum Hall state, fractional quorum Hall state, the PX plus IPY topological superconductor, the Ising TQFT, and chiral spin liquids. Some of them do not have anions, so they're like kind of the simplest chiral topological order. For example, the integer quantum Hall states and the PX plus IPY topological superconductor. They are the simplest chiral topological order. But for fractional quantum Hall state and the Ising TQFT and the chiral spin liquids, they do have anions, so like kind of more non-trivial. So the question is, can we find scaled invariant mirror circuits with strictly local gates for chiral topologically ordered systems? It turns out that the answer is hard. So let me just give you some reason why it is hard. And it's so-called the correlation length reduction no-go argument. So basically what that's saying is that after each layer of entanglement renormalization, we'll get the following formula. So what L prime means is that it is the new correlation length with respect to the new coarse grain lattice. And L here is the old correlation length with respect to the old coarse grain lattice. And B is some factor greater than one. So I'm not going to show you how this is derived, but if you're more interested in like, you can take a look at this in our like archive preprint. So here I'm just tell you the key idea. So basically, because correlation lengths are defined with respect to the using the decaying tails of two-point correlators, and because we are doing things locally using the strictly local mirror at each layer, so that procedure won't change the decaying tail of the two-point correlator. It can only change some prefactors up front. So basically, after each step, the correlation length should stay the same. However, remember that we have already disentangled some of the qubits. And so when you use the remaining qubits, we have the coarse grain lattice. And the coarse grain lattice can have a lattice constant b times larger than the original one. So if you define that with respect to the new coarse grain lattice, the correlation then has to be scaled down by a factor of b. That's how this is derived. Any question? Okay, so right now, because we want to find us, if you want to make the chiral topological order to be a fixed point, what that means is that we want the new coarse grain like wave function has to be the same as the original one. And together with the correlation length reduction formula we previously mentioned, that will imply that L has to be L equal to L divided by B because psi prime has equal to b psi, so L prime has to be equal to L. What that means is that L has to be either zero or infinite. So what does that mean? That means that if a chiral topological order system is a fixed point wave function under a scaled invariant mirror, then the correlation length has to be either zero or infinite. However, if the correlation length is infinite, that means the system is gapless. But for a chiral topological order system, we want a gap system. What about the case with zero correlation length? It turns out it's really hard to find. So there are some like some no-go arguments saying that what is hard. So if you're more interested in that, you can take a look at those references, but I'm not going to delve into that.
So are those references rigorous proofs?
No, they're various assumptions. Yeah. So the big question, the question is that, can we go beyond the conventional Merak framework composed of strictly local and discrete gates to develop entanglement renormalization circuits for chiral topological order? So because previous argument works when we have strictly local gates, so maybe one way to circumvent those no-go argument is to consider quasi-local evolution. So what is quasi-local evolution? So here, I'm trying to illustrate what quasi-local evolution is. So on the left-hand side, we have some strictly local gates, the conventional strictly local gates. On the right-hand side here, it is the quasi-local evolution, which is a unitary generated by a time-dependent Hamiltonian. And a time-dependent Hamiltonian can have super polynomially decaying tails. So what is super polynomial decaying tails? By that I mean the Hamiltonian can be decomposed into terms, and those terms are h sub little r. And h sub little r is basically like a term support like with center on the position r. And those terms can be further decomposed into terms supporting on sites within disks of different radii capital R. And those terms have to be uniformly bounded by 1 over r to the alpha for all alpha greater than 0. That's what I mean by super polynomial decaying. So let me just try to illustrate what that means for the case when little r is at the origin. So you can see that it can further decompose into terms supporting on site within disk of different like radii. And the strength has to be like decaying very, very fast. So okay, so here I'm just show you what quasi-local evolution is. So because like it has this kind of decaying tail, so previous no-go argument probably doesn't work because the correlation length can change after you apply a single layer of a quasi-local evolution. That might help you to circumvent the argument. So maybe we can have an entanglement renormalization circuit for chiral topological order with quasi-local evolution. So now let me just to...
I'm not sure, compared to a strictly local finite depth circuit, what's the difference regarding the correlation thing changing or not? Like, I thought a strictly local finite depth circuit can also change the correlation.
No, it cannot. Because we're doing changing things locally, and because correlation lengths are defined using tails, the tails of the correlators, it cannot change.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
What's the importance of having the time-dependent Hamiltonian?
It's just because we want to be as general as possible. Right. Mm-hmm. Great. Thank you.
So compared to the usual local case,
uh-huh.
In this case, which of the general statements we're familiar with will be changed? For example, does Lipschitz matrix still apply? Levy Robinson?
I don't know. How does it connect to Lipschitz matrix?
Sorry.
We can talk about it later. I'm not so sure.
Maybe a basic question. Say for a chiral topological order,
uh-huh.
if I know it realizes this state from a local Hamiltonian, then I know it must be gapped. But with this kind of interaction, do I know it must be gapped?
Sorry, I cannot. It's very hard to know the answer right now. But that's a good question. We can talk about later. So let me here try to give you a simplest example of how like quasi-local evolution might help us like to get a entanglement renormalization circuit for a simplest chiral topological order, which is the PX plus IPY topological superconductor. It doesn't have anions, but it serves as a great example. So what is? Let me just briefly remind you what a PX plus IPY topological superconductor is. So basically, it's written as the following Hamiltonian. So it has some horizontal pairings and some vertical hoppings. So like horizontal pairing and vertical hopping, horizontal hopping, vertical hopping, and horizontal pairing and vertical pairing. And so the arrowhead, if there's an arrowhead, it means that it's a creation operator. And if there's no arrow, it means an elation operator. So like here, we have two creation operators. And we also have some on-site chemical potential term. And the parameter like here, the mu, like chemical potential has to be within this region in order to be the PX plus IPY topological superconductor. Okay, so now we want to perform a single step of entanglement randomization for the PX plus IPY topological superconductor. So what we want to do is that we want to find some procedures such that after the entanglement randomization process, we're arriving at the following state. So we have some fermionic sites. They are being disentangled as empty sites. However, for the remaining sites, they are still entangled. And they are not only entangled, but actually they are the same as the original PX plus IPY topological superconductor. So the horizontal hopping and vertical hopping, they're all the same. So how do we get from the initial state we mentioned in the previous slide to the final state here? Any guess? So it turns out the answer is that instead of considering strictly local gates, we will consider something called the adiabatic evolution. So what that means is that according to the adiabatic theorem you learned in quantum mechanics, we learn that if we can find some adiabatic path or maybe a gap, a path of gap Hamiltonian, which connect the initial Hamiltonian to the final Hamiltonian, then an adiabatic evolution can exactly take you from the initial ground state to the final ground state. I think that's pretty clear. Yeah. So, but like in general, like that kind of question is kind of hard because how do we find that gap path? But it turns out that for this case, the answer is quite simple. We just have to linearly interpolate between the initial Hamiltonian and the final Hamiltonian. And here is a plot showing that the energy gap does not close if we tune the parameter lambda. So here we have found a path of gap Hamiltonian. It's kind of the miracle. Like typically it doesn't work like this. So however, like exact adiabatic evolution.
What is H initial and H final in this case?
Yeah, H initial will be this. H final will be this, but for those sites, they have to be penalized so that such that the ground state is like the empty sites. And for the remaining like blue sites, they are still the PX plus IPY topological superconductor. Thanks for clarification. However, exact adiabatic
Why is this quasi-local and not?
I haven't explained. Thank you. However, exact adiabatic evolution takes an infinite amount of time, and we don't want to like wait the until the universe ends, right? So what we'll do instead is we'll convert the adiabatic path to a finite time quasi adiabatic evolution, and it can be shown that it's actually a quasi local evolution. So what is a quasi adiabatic evolution? So basically, quasi adiabatic evolution can be written as the following form. So basically, it's a unitary generated by some time-dependent Hamiltonian. And the time-dependent Hamiltonian is related to the interpolating Hamiltonian by the following formula. And now I'm not going to delve into the technical details. It can be shown that this D has to be quasi-local. So this quasi-adiabatic evolution is a quasi-local evolution. So if you just apply this procedure, we can renormalize the PX plus IPY topological superconductor by using the H of lambda we previously mentioned.
This is assuming that H of lambda is gapped.
Say again?
This is assuming that H of lambda is gapped.
Yeah, H of lambda is gapped, and we have shown that numerically.
What is F?
Yeah, good question. F is some function with some certain properties. For example, the Fourier transform has to be greater than 1 when the frequency is greater than 1. I mean, probably decays sub-exponentially in real space, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in that, like you can look at the appendix B of our like preprint. Yeah.
I think I missed something. So how is alpha related to this? Like how do you?
No, I'm saying that this has to be bounded by O alpha.
And
O alpha. So that means it's decaying faster than any power law function. But it could be like maybe slower than some exponential function, but we don't know. We just know the bound. Yeah. So it's super polynomial decaying. Thank you. Yeah, question.
Is it true that every quasi-local evolution can be turned into a strictly local one with log depth?
Every quasi-local evolution can be No, I'm not. Say again. Sorry, not. I mean,
maybe it's a little off point, but I'm just curious if.
I'm turning an adiabatic path.
Yeah, I understand. I'm just trying to make contact with the strictly local circuit and asking what depth do you need
for quasi local?
A quasi local evolution.
Using strictly local one?
Yeah. Is it always?
I'm not so sure about the answer because you have to also control the errors, something like that, because you kind of try to trotterize it and there are some errors. But I'm not going to deal with that because I want to do things exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember that if you are now for a small error, then the next two is basically the same. I mean, like the quasi local one and the strictly.
I mean, they have to be dependent on the error, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm doing things exactly here. Yeah. I'm not so sure the exact formula. I don't remember, but yeah, thanks.
Maybe a basic question. Why is the time of evolution isn't simply generated by the Hamiltonian?
Because like, as we know, like from the adiabatic theorem, like it takes an infinite amount of time to go from the initial state to the final state.
Okay.
So like, if you want to do it very fast, there will be some error, like, I don't know, Landau Zener, maybe stuff like that. Thanks for the great questions.
So the statement here is that if I apply this UQA to the initial state, I will obtain the final state without any error.
Correct. We're doing this for, this is for like each layer of entanglement normalization, but we want to keep applying the same procedure again and again. Yep. So here's a short summary. So we have introduced the notion of chiral topological order, and we have presented the correlation length reduction no-go argument to show why constructing conventional Merrill circuits with strictly local gates for chiral topological order is hard. However, we can construct an entanglement renormalization circuit for the non-interacting PX plus IPY topological superconductor using quasi-local evolution. The quasi-local evolution helps us circumvent the correlation length reduction no-go argument. Question?
So one of the other no-go theorems that you cited is that states that you can't have realized chiral topological order as the ground as the ground state of some commuting projector Hamiltonian.
Yeah, that's some paper related.
How that is related to Mera either.
Yeah, I mean just saying that having a zero correlation is kind of hard. Yeah. So if it has to be a fixed point wave function under Mera, then this must have zero correlation then, but it's hard. I'm just like kind of.
So
it's not.
Did you imply that commuting projector Hamiltonians are somehow related to fixed points?
Yeah. I'm just saying like it's expected that having a commuting projector Hamiltonian, like maybe we will have a fixed point. Like, I mean they're kind of related. So I mean just like a piece of evidence, but that's not very direct. I agree. So that's hard. I'm not saying it is impossible. So there are some like rooms to improve. So here I'm going to talk about the third part of this talk, which is the main result of our So previously I've talked about how to build entanglement renormalization circuits for non-interacting PX plus IPY topological superconductor. However, building entanglement renormalization circuits for interacting chiral states remain a largely unexplored area. Now, we'll use the insights we gained from previous examples to construct entanglement renormalization circuits for a class of chiral spin liquids. And their circuits are called Mera with quasi-local evolution, or Miracle. Okay. So what are the chiral spin liquids we consider? So the chiral spin liquids we are considering here are exactly solvable chiral spin liquids that we will construct through bosonizing new layers of PX plus IPY topological superconductors. And the resulting spin liquids can be thought of as layers of PX plus IPY topological superconductors coupled to a Z2 lattice gauge theory. And it can be shown that our construction falls into Kitaev's 16-fold weight classification. Don't worry about those like technical terms, I will explain it in later slides. So what is bosonization? What is bosonizing mean? So here, first we start with a system start with a fermionic system with fermions living on the faces of the square lattice. And as we know that a theory written in terms of creation operators and annihilation operators can be rewritten in terms of Majorana operators with the following commutation relation. And so the algebra of the fermionic theory can be generated by the following three types of generators, horizontal hoppings, vertical hoppings, and the fermion parity operators. And it turns out that the fermionic theory can be dual to a spin theory with spins living on the lengths of the square lattice. And the spin theory is subject to a constraint called the zero flux constraint. I'll explain that later. And why is this procedure called bosonization? That's because spins can be thought of as Hartree bosons, with zero being the unoccupied state and one being the occupied state. Yeah, and then through bosonization, we can map those fundamental generators of the fermionic theory into some corresponding spin operators. And roughly speaking, one way to understand bosonization is that we can think of fermions as emergent excitation of the spin theory. Yeah, any question? Okay. So additionally, what I want to mention is that as the name of the zero flux constraint suggests, if we violate those constraints, what it turns out, that means that we can think of the spin theory as having like fermions coupled to Z2 lattice gauge fluxes. And the Z2 lattice gauge fluxes will give rise to vortices in fermions. So let me work out some to bosonize some of the fermionic Hamiltonians. So let's start with a zero layer of PX plus IPY topological superconductor. So instead of having a fermionic topological superconductor, we first consider a so-called, we call it a trivial insulator, with a Hamiltonian written like this. So the ground state of this Hamiltonian is is basically the empty state for the fermions, like vacuum. And if we work out the bosonization, we'll find that the Hamiltonian is basically has the following form. So it's a sum of terms with ZZZZ acting on the spins nearby a phase F. So together with the zero flux constraint, these two, because these two are like operators commute, and we can easily check that, they form the same stabilizer group as the toroidal model. So what that means is that the ground state is the toroidal ground state. And also from this, we can see that why this we call it a zero flux constraint. Because if we violate this zero flux constraint, but not violating this, that will create an M particle in the toroidal, and which is a Z2 gauge flux. OK, so let me try to bosonize a single layer of PX plus IPY topological superconductor. Oh, so as I mentioned previously, so the spin liquid constructed through bosonization can be thought of as fermions coupled to a Z2 lattice gauge theory. So we know that because like PX plus, when we couple a PX plus IPY topological superconductor to a Z2 lattice gauge theory, it's well known that the theory will be described by the so-called Ising TQFT. So the bosonization of the PX plus IPY topological superconductor, we'll call the resulting chiral spin liquid as the Ising chiral spin liquid. So here I'm just trying to show you the macroscopic Hamiltonian of the what we call Ising chiral spin liquid. So I know like it looks like a little bit complicated at first glance, but don't worry about it. So you can see some familiar stuff like hoppings, pairings, and the chemical potential here. And we also have some like a relationship between like the nearby ages and the relationship between the phases and the ages, something like that. So the technical details is not so important here. And you can see that it also involves, this also involves a multi-body interaction, which means that this theory is an interacting theory. So here I'm just showing you how to like bosonize a single layer of PX plus IPY topological superconductor. So we can keep repeating this procedure to bosonize multiple layers of PX plus IPY topological superconductors. So if we bosonize different layers of PX plus IPY topological superconductors, we'll get many different kinds of chiral topological orders. So for example, if you have bosonized one layer, as I previously mentioned, we'll get a torico. We bosonize one layer, we'll get Ising TQFT with anions. If we bosonize two layers, it turns out it will be in the same phase as the Laughlin fractional quantum Hall state at filling fraction a quarter. And if we bosonize three layers, we'll arrive at the so-called bosonic Mori fractional quantum Hall state at filling fraction one, and so on and so forth. And also, like if the number of layer is an odd number, we'll get a non-abelian state. And if it is even, you will get an abelian state. However, even though I say that we can get many different kinds of topological orders, however, like Kitaev's paper in 2005 tells us that we can only get 16 different kinds of topological order from the perspective of the topological properties of the anions, which is determined by the layer number mod 16. So it's a little bit like a clock hand rotating on the clock face. So rather than like a traditional clock that one, we have 12 markings. Here we only have 16 markings. So we'll get a clock hand rotating round and round. Okay, any question? Okay, so the question is, can we find scaled invariant entanglement renormalization circuits such that our chiral spin liquids are the fixed point wave functions? Can we circumvent the correlation land reduction no-go argument? It turns out the answer is yes. So it's a so-called miracle. So the entangled renormalization circuits are mirror circuits with quasi-local evolution. So let me just tell you a very high-level idea. So because the spin liquids here, as I said before, can be thought of as multiple layers of PX plus IPY topological superconductors coupled to the Z2 lattice gauge theory. So very, very roughly speaking, the circuit for those chiral spin liquids can be done by, like, roughly speaking, renormalizing the PX plus IPY and renormalizing the Z2 lattice gauge theory. So for the PX plus IPY topological superconductors, we'll just use the quasi-adiabatic evolutions. But because the theory here is actually composed of spin, so we have to bosonize the theory. And this part will give you some quasi-local evolution. And for the Z2 lattice gauge theory, because it's also related to the torico, so actually we'll simply apply the Merrill circuit for a torico. Okay? So here just a very, very high level idea, and I will give you a more detailed explanation right now. So let's just start with a zero layer case. And as we know, like the ground state is just basically the torico ground state that we just mentioned at the beginning of the talk. So we just simply apply the same circuit. That's done. Okay. However, what about the case for a single layer of PX plus IPY topological superconductor? What is the circuit for the Ising chiral spin liquid for that? Can we just apply the Merrill circuit, the Merrill circuit for the torico? So, I mean, if many of the spins behave like a Tory code, we should expect that this should work. So what that really means is that the fermionic sites before bosonization have to be in the empty state. So if you work out this mathematics correctly, what you will find is that we will require that all those blue B faces have to be in the empty state for the fermionic site before bosonization. Okay. But it turns out that those B sites are not empty. Why? Because they're already participating in the PX plus IPY topological superconductor. So what should we do? So recall that, like previously, I just used the quasi-adiabatic circuit to renormalize PX plus IPY topological superconductor. What that really does is that that will make the sum of the degrees of freedom be in the empty side. Okay, but there we are using we're doing randomization for the for fermion theory. But here we're actually dealing with the spin theory. So we have to bosonize it. So it turns out the answer would be just the bosonization of the quasi-adiabatic circuit for the PX plus IPY topological superconductor. And with this, we'll make the B sites here before bosonization empty. Okay, any question?
So does one really need all this bosonization trick? Like, what if you just start up some parent Hamiltonian for the chiral spin liquid?
Mm-hmm.
And again, you're just trying to deform it.
Yeah.
So it's supported on a sparser lattice.
Right.
I guess you're just worried about the possibility of a gap closing.
Yeah. I mean, in general, it's kind of hard, like, to know whether the gap will close or not in the thermodynamic limit. Yeah. And the trick here, because like the theory can be thought of as non-interacting, roughly speaking, it's thought of as non-interacting fermions coupled to a Z2 gauge field. And for each part, we can exactly know what the gap is.
Okay.
But in general, it's kind of hard. But I'm interested in exploring more possibilities, like what you said.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for that question. Any other question? I think we have sufficient time and then think about. Okay. So basically, the mirror for the new equal one Ising chiral spin liquid will be the following. So here, this is a circuit for a horizontal entanglement renormalization for the Ising chiral spin liquid. So basically, it has two parts. One is the bosonization of the quasi-adiabatic circuit for the PX plus IPY topological superconductor. And here, we have the mirror for the toric code. And this part will be quasi-local. And that's why it's called, the circuit will be called miracle. And we can, like, this procedure can easily be generalized to other 16-4-way chiral spin liquids. Like, the key idea is here, like, if you're interested in more details, we can read our, like, archive print. So let me go to the conclusions and outlook. So the conclusion is that we have constructed entanglement renormalization circuits for chiral spin liquids that fall into Kitaev's 16-4-way classification. Some chiral spin liquids are abelian and some are non-abelian. And equipped with quasi-local evolutions, miracle circuits are more powerful than mirror circuits. The quasi-local evolution helped us circumvent the correlation length reduction local argument. Okay. So we can also rephrase our result in the quantum complexity language. So here we have two complexity classes. So on the left-hand side, we have a complexity class referred to the state that can be prepared under a scaled invariant mirror, and the state is a fixed point wave function. And the circuit must be built with strictly local gates. And on the right-hand side, it means the state that can be prepare as a fixed point using strictly local gates and quasi-local evolution. And our results shows that these two complexity classes are separate. Why? Because preparing the 16-4-way chiral spin liquid scale invariantly is not in here because of the correlation length reduction no-go argument. So what that means is that the notion of locality of quantum circuits needs refinement, because quasi-local and strictly local makes a difference. And chiral topological order is likely more complex than non-chiral topological order. Okay. So here's the outlook. I'm so interested in the entanglement renormalization for chiral topological order. And today I've just talked about a so-called miracle circuit for a class of chiral spin liquids that fall into Kitaev's 16-fold weight classification. And we previously have also done some work using like a continuous MERA for a churn insulator model. And I also have some unpublished work using chiral coupled wire construction for more like general chiral states, such as the Laughlin state and some other like fractional quantum Hall state. So there are more like we want to explore in the future. Thank you so much.
We have a couple minutes for questions.
Thank you.
So when you look at the abelian versus non-abelian chiral states that you can prepare, is there any difference in the complexity?
No, in our construction, no.
Yeah, you didn't start from the unentangled state.
Unentangled, so now I'm starting from, it's a little bit like as an analogy that I have just gave, like we started with a small amount of bacteria in the petri dish, and then we'll grow the bacteria like after like those bacteria like multiply after eating some nutrients. So we have to initially start with some, like we're not just getting stuff out of thin air. Like that's not what I'm doing here. But you're asking like, can we do that just starting from some initially product state, right? That's what you ask. So let me. So as you can see, like from this 1D example here. So so here like the system is very complex and has like highly entangled with a high amount of entanglement, but here the entanglement is sparser. So like so basically we have a lot of qubits in a zero state, and so the entanglement only happens between the red circles. So here, up here in the deep IR region, like the system size is very, very small compared to the system size here. And because the system size is small, maybe we can use some other methods to prepare the state of those initial systems. But that's not what we're not considering that. Yeah. I mean, you can use some other method like dissipation, or maybe because the state is kind of small, maybe you can just use like some special method to prepare them. For example, you can just blindly adiabatic prepare, or maybe not. Like,
But I guess it's true that for this scene, no matter which point in the phase diagram you start out with at the UV level, by construction, that's just the fixed point.
You mean in our work?
Point in the phase diagram is by definition a fixed point.
In our framework, yes.
So mm-hmm. Can I just say that this mirror circuit is doing a sort of parton construction?
Exactly. I think it can be thought of as some like parton constructions. But I'm not so sure. I'm very interested in whether like more general parton construction works. But because like as far as I know, like some parton construction requires some continuous gauge field. And I'm not so sure about how to deal with that.
I was just going to ask whether you could start with an integer quantum Hall state.
Yeah, I mean, so interesting in that. But the problem is, I'm also not so sure how do we find the analog of those, like here, we can have like the toroidal MERA, right, for the Z2 lattice gauge theory. But for the continuous case, it's not so clear to me how does that work. And also, another thing is that here we have we're using bosonization to construct chiral spin liquids, but I'm not so sure about the analog of that for the continuous case. But I mean, I think those are all excellent questions, but I currently don't know the answer to them.
Okay, if there are no more questions, thanks, Iguan.
Thank you, everyone.